Welcome back to A Better Love. I'm your host, Dr. Greg, joined by Dr. Jeffrey Greif. We're going to be talking about male friendships today, a very important topic. Dr. Greif is a distinguished university professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. He's the author of 15 books, two of which we'll talk about today. Dr. Greif, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Greg, for having me.
We appreciate you. First, you've been at the University of Maryland for quite some time. Tell us a little bit about your work nowadays, and how does love show up in your work? We're a show about love.
Oh, wow. I love the fact that you're a show about love. My current work is, I'm working on a new study of interracial and interethnic marriage, and that's been a very important topic to me, and it's also very important topic, I think, for society. Given the last few years, we've seen a rise in hate crimes against a number of minority groups and also against a number of faiths. There's been an uptick, and these changing norms about what we can say to each other sometimes come out in a negative way. They sometimes come out in a positive way, and they can put a lot of pressure on a couple to try and process what's happening in broader society, and also the impact on their children who are biracial or multiracial. So it has a number of layers. My prior book to that was on in-law relationships. Prior to that, in 2016, with Dr. Michael Woolley, a book on adult sibling relationships, and going backwards to where we are, we'll be talking about my book on couples friendships with Kathy Deal, and then my solo book on men's friendships.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously we're talking, the research you're looking at right now is looking at couples and how they navigate these external stressors, et cetera. How does love come up in your work, do you think, if you were to think about love in your research and your teaching?
Yeah, I think for my teaching, it certainly is an incredibly important theme. I teach the advanced social work students family therapy. Okay. And I've been doing that for 40 years. And what I've begun to put into my lectures in the last 10 years as sort of a touchstone is the fact that if a therapist in working with a struggling family can get love into the room or have some way of bringing in love, either metaphorically or actually, you can find some basis for understanding between people. I can ask families that are struggling, I know you folks are struggling. How do you show love? When was the last time you showed love in the family? Or if it's never been shown, or they say it's never been shown, if it were to be shown, how would you like it to be shown? And how would you like various people in your family, your grandmother, your sibling, your child, your partner to show love? So I think it's a really important through theme, because a lot of therapy, psychology, and social work is about how do we make better intimate relationships? And if you want to think more broadly, those could also be very important relationships with agencies or hospitals or schools. People tend to think of intimate relationships as between humans, but if a person has a really important connection with their high school, that can help to maintain them when things are struggle outside of school.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And probably we're meeting our friends in these places too, and which we'll get into. Obviously, you kind of outlined a little bit of your scholarship more recently. You've been writing more about friendship. Why was it that you moved into the arena of talking about friendship specifically? What motivated you to do that?
I've always been interested in men in non-traditional roles. And I did in my master's program at University of Pennsylvania School of Social Work, as it was called at the time, I did my master's thesis on men's consciousness raising groups. And that was about 50 years ago, when women's consciousness raising groups were very big, and a number of us colleagues and also friends were getting together to say, what are the meanings of women's consciousness raising for men? How can men do their own consciousness raising outside of women? So I've always been interested in men in non-traditional roles. And then that morphed into my dissertation at Columbia on single fathers raising their children alone. And that was a very non-traditional role. It's still non-traditional, but not as much as it was when I did my research 40 years ago. So I've sort of had a through theme about what about men. I'm very interested in gender roles, and gender comes up in the adult sibling book. It comes up in the in-law book. It's coming up in the interracial marriage book. But when it came time to be thinking about, well, how do men connect with people outside of the family? Because I had been working inside of the confines of the family with a bunch of research study. I thought this is a really important topic, both for me personally, but also hopefully for others. If they can appreciate their own friendships better, they're going to have more love in their life. I guess we can talk further about the advantages of friendship as we go on.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, there's these intimate relationships that men can, you know, if they can pull it off, we'll talk a little bit, but within families, but all this, there's so many people outside in our communities and other things, other connections that we can create. But it seems like there are many men specifically, but many of us who are facing this epidemic of loneliness, which the Surgeon General recently called out. What is it that your book, Buddy System, Understanding Male Friendships, tells us about this epidemic of loneliness, what men are going through, and what we need to be looking at right now?
I think when I wrote the book, people were really struggling with how to connect with each other. Men were afraid to pursue other men too much. I'm a straight man, been married to the same woman for many, many years. And I was raised in a time where it was okay to pursue a woman for a relationship. But I was never sort of raised in a time where it's okay to pursue a man for a friendship.
Yes.
So there's certain tropes around, you know, what it means to be masculine. Is it okay, Greg, if I call you up and say, look, the Ravens were on last night, do you want to come over and watch? I'm in Baltimore, obviously. Do you want to come over and watch the game? You say, Jeff, yeah, thanks. No, I can't do it. Bye. Am I going to call you up again? Or am I going to say, I guess it's not, you know, I don't want to seem too needy. So I think there's a lot around how men pursue other men.
Yes.
We tend to hang out with men at our same level of masculinity.
Okay.
Sort of writ large, and it doesn't apply to maybe anybody that's listening to this podcast, but it tends to be the football players hang out with the football players, the chess players hang out with the chess players, and the poets hang out with the poets. So it tends to be that we like to go with men, and I'm not saying that poets and chess players are not masculine. It's just a certain level of activity, though we can look historically at what masculinity looks like, which was, in fact, the knight in the shining armor who saved the damsel in distress as one model of the rough and strong man. But the other model of masculinity is the silver-tongued bard who is below his love's window and wooing her with words. So those are two very distinct, but certainly that bard was seen as masculine and endearing and attractive as the guy on the steed. So we have to think about what are the broad parameters of masculinity. How do those affect how I'm supposed to be interacting with my peers if I'm 7 years old, if I'm 12 years old, if I'm 17 years old, and you can, you know, keep on going up the ladder. The good news is that it's much more accepting for men to be physically and verbally expressive than it ever has been. I think society is moving in a very important way. It's just moving slowly and not moving as fast as women, but maybe we shouldn't be comparing ourselves to women. Maybe we should just be thinking about ourselves.
I've never heard that said, but that makes sense in some ways too, right? Maybe we shouldn't be comparing ourselves to women, particularly we're in an entirely different system,
right,
of beliefs and values and other things that we're contesting with as we're trying to make friends with other men. So what is the pursual? What's the end game on the pursual thing? It's okay to pursue other men we should call the person back up to ask them to come watch another football game. We should make that attempt. Yeah.
But until we're told no, and it's the same thing as pursuing anybody else for a relationship, until it's clear the message is no, you have to say, I'm going to continue to go ahead and call up Greg for the Ravens next game, and not ascribe anything to myself as a person if Greg doesn't respond in a way that I have imagined, you should respond.
Yeah. The Ravens game was great, by the way, last night. They did very well.
Yeah.
The buddy system, as that language itself, has special meaning to me. I served in the United States Marine Corps for a time.
I saw that.
And there was a buddy, there really is like a buddy system in the Marine Corps. Particularly, I was stationed in Okinawa, Japan, and we weren't allowed off the base if we didn't have another Marine to go with. So what is the concept of the buddies? Is there a specific concept there around a buddy system? Or is it just a way into talking about male relationships?
I wish there was a higher calling to it, but I had one title for the book, and the book editor said, I don't like your title, I'm going to come up with a different title.
Okay.
Let's just call it like it is here. That's why you have other people looking at your work.
There's nothing higher there. Okay, I got you.
No, I one of the things I did talk about, though, in the book is the type of buddies that we keep. And I did go back after she retitled the book and filtered that into various parts of the book. And I was able to come up with four different categories of buddies. We have your must friends, your trust friends, your rust friends, and your just friends. Now, I'm a songwriter on the side, so you get where that's coming. So a must friend, if I can go into this for a second.
Please do, yes.
Is if something catastrophically bad or catastrophically good happens to me, there are going to be two or three men that I'm going to call. I win the lottery, I get a bad health diagnosis, I'm going to call up these guys within 24 hours. I need something, I'm going to call them up within 24 hours. Those are your must friends. That's a pretty small group. But the next level is this really interesting level, and that's what I call trust friends. I go to a party, I see a bunch of guys that I like, we have, great conversations, I trust them, they trust me, we open up, but we're not sort of circling together in this smaller group. But when I see them, it's great. And maybe we go out together once a year, and it's always very, very reaffirming. And that's a larger group of friends. And that's what, I think a lot of people need to have, not just those two or three buddies or must friends, but a larger group, and feel comfortable meeting people. You may meet somebody on the bus and say, the old story, you meet a stranger on the bus and tell them your whole life. And that can work very well. The other levels are the rust friends, my high school, friends who I see every 5 years at my high school reunion, who know me and I know them, and maybe I revert back to the jerk I was in high school, and they revert back to the jerk that they were in high school, and it's kind of fun. Now, my rust friends may be a must friend, because some people believe you can only be friend. Aristotle, we can talk about Aristotle. Some of this believes you can only be friends with somebody that you've known for a while. I don't happen to buy that, but that's a different road to go down. And then there are just friends. I have people at work, they're just friends. They can drop in my office, I'll chat with them, maybe we'll go out for lunch, maybe every 2 years they'll come to my house for a large party, but they're probably not coming for a more intimate or smaller party. And that's the sort of the four different layers of friendships. Now, Aristotle, you talk about being a buddy in your experience in Okinawa. Aristotle says you become friends with somebody with whom you have shared salt. And he doesn't just mean eating bread and sharing a meal, but going through the same thing. It's, as you know better than I, the buddies in the foxhole become your most important friend during the time that you're together. And maybe they can call you up, you can call them up 20 years later and said, hey, I need you, and they'll fly from Okinawa or wherever they are to you as you need them. And you have shared salt, and you're going to be very close friends because of having shared a challenging experience. Now, obviously, we don't have as many of those conflicts as we did in Aristotle's day, but it, sharing a salt may mean now I have a disabled child, which I don't, but if I did, I'm wheeling that child in a carriage, and you're wheeling your child in the carriage, and we meet, we begin to share salt about what it's like to to raise a child that has, you know, a variety of disabilities. That could be sharing salt today.
First of all, I wonder how many men have this constellation of four friendships that you've described, because it seems like you're describing a healthy balance between these four different kind of relationships. Are we getting better at being able, as men, you suggested this is the case, getting better at being able to develop this wide range of friendships and closeness with other men?
I'm a eternal optimist, so I'll say yes to that. That the notion that, you know, society is moving forward, at least on an interpersonal basis. We can argue what's happening, you know, writ large between groups in our society, but men are certainly more comfortable acting in a variety of ways, being physically and emotionally expressive. There's wider acceptance of gays and lesbians, LGBT community, than there's ever been, according to every poll. It's easier to be marching to your own drummer than it's ever been in our society. There still are constraints in some places, but there are certainly more options for how I wish to express myself. And I would feel a greater sense of acceptance today if I fit outside of what is, you know, a heteronormative cisgender society. So yeah, I think we're moving in a good way. I think that Zoom, Facebook all allows us to stay in touch with people. I could email my high school friends now. 30 years ago, I would have had to have, you know, tracked down their phone number someplace. Now I can find them on Facebook. So the ability to make connections and sustain connections, and that all was heightened during the COVID pandemic. We all now know how to work Zoom. We all would know it anyway, but it certainly, COVID heightened our ability to learn the ins and outs of this kind of communication that were always there, but were not pressed upon us the way that the last 4 years have done.
And yet we still find ourselves quite lonely, us men. And I studied, in my doctoral research, I studied masculinity and expression in the military specifically, in therapy. But the pendulum is swinging. I'm not sure. I think we may be having more challenges with romantic relationships. We may actually be getting better at friendships. Glad to hear that you're optimistic, having watched this for several decades now. I talk a lot about relationship skills here at A Better Love Project, and in my work with couples and couples therapy, but also here at UCLA on the college campus. Do you think that we have a relationship skills deficit as men, even with the change in this opening of different expressions of masculinity and other things?
As compared to women, if we want to use women as our model, we go back to the opening, you know, discussion. If we use women as our model, sure, we're not as expressive as they are. Whether or not that's good or bad is, you know, something else. You and I are in the same field. We're in a talk therapy field where we believe, you know, expressing ourselves is good, and everybody should have open communication. And that is true, and according to the most of the research. Doesn't mean that applies to everybody in the room. One of the things I talk about in my latter books, I talk about it in class with families, is the notion of families and relationships have affection, ambivalence, and ambiguity.
Okay.
And the fact that we have these tropes that you should not have any ambivalence or any ambiguity about your family relations or your intimate relationships, I think, is a falsehood. And one of the things I think it's important is that Of course, I have affection for my wife and my adult children, but sometimes there's ambivalent feelings and there's some ambiguity. I don't quite know why they did what they did. And a lot of my research with Michael Woolley is about, we're not just one person always with affection, and it's okay. It's normal. It's typical. If I have, you know, ambivalent feelings towards the woman I love and to whom I've been married for many years, or my children or grandchildren, to expect, and we're coming up on Thanksgiving, this Norman Rockwell picture of relationships are always loving and there's a great turkey and everybody's sitting around the room having a great time, I don't think is a good model to have in our heads, as opposed to, yeah, I have great affection for these people in the room, but, you know, sometimes there are things they do that I don't like or I don't buy. But hopefully the affection covers that and says, but that's part of life. We can all remember our siblings and the million interactions we have with them, but maybe we're focusing on the five that were negative and not the 999,995 that were positive. So, you know, what's the narrative that we want to bring to all our relationships? And one of the things I talk about in Buddy System is I interviewed a group of brothers and they said, we never open ourselves up to a negative reaction from a brother. We always just interpret everything in a positive way. Hmm. You know, why open up a negative interpretation unless you're clearly telling me that this is negative and I'm under attack from you? Why would I entertain that? I'm just going to believe everything you tell me is loving or is meant in a loving way, even mm-hmm. though it may not come out that way.
So in other words, may not all be experts at communication, but having the attitudinal bias toward love and affection, another thing that can carry the day.
That's great. Yeah, you said it much better and more succinctly than I did. That's why you're doing this and I'm not.
Oh, cheers. That was a
loving response.
Yeah, that was very loving. Thank you, Gert. I appreciate that. The other book that I'd love to talk about today, you mentioned a little earlier, you co-authored 2+2 Couples and Their Couple Friendships, which seems to emphasize the importance or the uniqueness of a couple friendship. What is it that we get, particularly men, because we're talking about men and heterosexual relationships, what do we get from a couple friendship with our partner or spouse that we don't get? What's unique about that?
Well, having a couple friendship is that you may have a chance to actually go out and have fun with your, I'll say, wife, that you and she are, it could be you and he, as you said, or you're not married, but for purposes of discussion, I'll say wife. You get to see your wife having fun with another woman and another man. And you may see her in a different light that you don't get a chance to see her when she's just with you or she's off on her own. So it opens up the opportunity for that. You also get to learn when you're with another couple about how they manage things. Mm-hmm. You may hear from a couple how they manage a difficult child, how they figured out a great trip through the Western party in the United States. You learn things. The interesting thing about gender is that, and we talk about this in the Buddy System, is that men tend to have shoulder-to-shoulder friendships and women tend to have face-to-face friendships. So you and I, Greg, will get together and say, come over and watch the football game.
Yeah.
Not let's meet at the corner that cute new French restaurant that opened up where we can have a glass of wine together. Let's get together and do sports or watch sports. Women feel more comfortable in face-to-face.
Yes.
So what happens in some couples' friendships is that I'll pretend that this is true of my wife and me. She thinks I need more friends. So she will arrange with her girlfriend, maybe your wife or partner, for us to get together because your wife partner thinks you don't have enough friendships. So they'll sort of engineer this, that you and I will then have more friends. Much more common for women to engineer friendships for their husbands. husbands almost never engineer.
That's not surprising to me.
Well, right. So we're speaking about that. So what happens is if I'm more comfortable talking sports with you and we're across from each other, we may get pulled into a more intimate kind of communication that women feel more comfortable with. And maybe that's what my wife would like too. So I may get drawn into having to talk about feelings as a foursome when all I really wanted to talk about was the Ravens.
The Ravens, yeah. This just reminds me of something I often talk about. You know, historically, men leaning on their wives to, you know, have scaffolding to learn emotional skills. And this is an example of how that happens. We get coaxed into the face-to-face kind of thing. So we really, I mean, I think it's still the case. We rely tremendously, particularly in heterosexual relationships, on our wives, because we don't learn these skills and we're not comfortable with these things as much to begin with. So right. Definitely a benefit. That makes sense to me. You write for Psychology Today, as do I, an article recently, Is It Hard to Make Friends with Another Couple? And in it, you talked about living longer and happier and healthier lives when we have these friendships. You talked earlier about these four different kinds of friendships. If I'm a guy and I'm trying to judge how well I'm doing in the friendship game, and that includes couples, what is my friendship group going to look like? Is it going to have lots of these trust friendships, as you mentioned earlier? Are some of those friendships going to be couples? What does that look like? How do I know I'm doing well, you know, making friends?
To quote James Taylor, if it feels right, don't think twice. I mean, that there's no way to sort of say overarching, because all of us are different, and what you need from friends may be the exact same as what I need or not. There's not really a consensual definition of what a friend is. I know from talking to men a lot that they say somebody that I can trust, somebody that has my back. But they also say someone who will tell it to me like it is. Now, if we're out someplace with a bunch of guys and you tell it to me like it is, does that mean you have my back or you don't have my back? So where does that go? And that's of course always true of relationships. Somebody says, I want you to be honest with me. Oh, on second thought, not that honest with me. So, you know, how these things work is going to vary. And sometimes we get pulled into couples friendships or dinners by our wives. Or maybe the wife is very good friends with the woman or the guy because they went to high school together. And I'm sitting there, you know, twiddling my thumbs waiting for the evening to finish. And sometimes you go out with other couples because the wife or husband was really kind to you or kind to your wife when you were ill. And so, you know, if I need to have them over for dinner, look, it's only an hour and a half or 2 hours. What's the big deal? Like, take a breath and say, why am I making this anything more than 2 hours of sitting there, hopefully having a good meal and smiling? It's sort of like, again, spin this thing to your own advantage and spin it to go back to your opening in a loving way. Let me make this work. Let me make it as loving as I can. Yeah, I'm not going to be friends with this guy if it wasn't for my wife. And I don't care about him, but I got to figure out a way to tolerate him to please my wife, perhaps.
Would you say we could suffice with one or two of those must? Was it must you said?
Must. Yeah. You the people
could we
you
suffice
must
with
call.
One or two must friends
until they die. it depends. I interviewed one guy who said all he has is one good friend, and that's all he needs. Okay, that's not what I need, but if that's all he needs, I'll take him at his word. I wouldn't advise people to only have one friend, because again, you know, friendships, as we said, you live happier, healthier, and longer lives with friends, according to not my research, but other epidemiological research. And it makes sense. Social networking is good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. We should all be doing it, particularly the men who are listening to this podcast right now. One last question. I mean, any other thoughts or recommendations? You've been doing this for a while. It's really a privilege to have you on the show today. Any other thoughts or recommendations for us men out there to live our healthiest life and be making friends? And any other thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah. Friends aren't going to come to your door. You have to go out. You have to reach out to other people. If you feel uncomfortable doing it, get involved in activities that you like, but get out of your house, get out of your space. If you want to make more friends, friends are not going to come to you unless you open yourself up to them, and try and frame things in a way that make you a pleasant person for people to be with.
Amazing, wise advice. Dr. Grive, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Greg.
We'll link Dr. Grive's books we discussed today, but you can also check out his blog on Psychology Today called Buddy System. As always, you can find us at Better Love Project everywhere. Until next time, love each other fiercely and peace.